The story of Jesus' appearance by the sea in the Gospel of John is one of the great stories in the whole Gospel tradition. The description of the disciples who had gathered there in Galilee is a list of most of the 12. So there are 7 of them who are listed. That means, not counting Judas, that there are only 4 who are not there. Andrew, Simon's brother, Philip, both of whom were the ones who the Greeks went to talk to Jesus. So most of the disciples are there in Galilee at the Sea of Tiberias. Now, the implication of this is that the disciples had gone back to life as usual as fishermen. And the tone of the naming of the disciples is then one of discouragement. You know, that Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathaniel, James and John, 2 others of his disciples were there by the sea. And so to convey in the way that you tell this that they had returned to their life as fishermen in Galilee and were discouraged is the implication of the story. So Simon Peter's decision then, or his trying to get some energy up. Well, I'm going to go fishing. I'm not just going to sit around here and be depressed. I'm going to go fish. And so they say, all right, well, we'll go with you. So they go out and they fish all night and they catch nothing. So the atmosphere of discouragement and is only heightened by their inability even to catch any fish. Jesus' appearance is a surprise. So Jesus appeared on the shore. This is not to be taken for granted. This is still a very unusual thing that someone who had died would appear. So it is not something just to be stated as a matter of fact, but rather that there is some, you know, surprise in this. But of course, the dynamic of the story is that the storyteller is telling this to the audience so that they know, we as listeners know what's going on, but the disciples don't know. So that's part of the fascination of this episode in the story, is then that we know what's going on, the disciples don't know. This is a characteristic of this story. There are many places in which the storyteller talks directly to the audience and tells them things that the disciples and the people in the story either don't know, or it's simply information that the storyteller, you know, gives to the audience. So a part of the dynamic of this is establishing an intimate relationship between the storyteller and the audience. So every opportunity that you have as a storyteller to give them this inside information, you want to move forward, address them, make contact with the audience so that, you know, they get the the straight inside poop on this, on what's going on. Jesus, you know, appeared on the shore, but the disciples didn't recognize that it was Jesus. And then picks up the story. So Jesus called out to them. Now, the call of Jesus obviously is a call across the sea. So it's not in a quiet voice. So it is, children, brothers, have you caught any fish? And they shouted back, no! So that needs to be in a loud voice. The dynamic of the story is in part created by a change in speed of tempo at the time when they throw their nets on the other side, and now they caught so many fish that their nets were starting to break. And so to change the tempo in that episode is, I think, an important dimension of the dynamic of this story. So now they had so many fish that their nets were starting to break, and the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Simon Peter, it's the Lord! Well, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, You know, he put his clothes back on, jumped into the sea, and so on. So it has that dynamic of the transformation of the scene from depression now to excitement and energy and transformation. Now, the comment about Peter being naked is, on the one hand, you know, this is a guy story, and so he was fishing naked. There's been a lot of discussion about whether he was, you know, totally naked or whether he had, you know, underwear on. In Mark, the word naked clearly means no clothes. And because the description is he had only a linen cloth around his body, and when they seized him, he left the linen cloth. So the implication is that's all he had on. I think that it's probable that in this case, it means that Peter, you know, had stripped and had nothing on, and that it's a kind of note of humor. And it's also a note of vigor and of, you know, good, clean male energy. You know, he put his clothes on, he was fishing naked and jumped into the sea. So it's a sign of Peter being a working man who was really working hard with the nets. The dragging of the net to the sea or to the shore by the disciples is again a sign of their strength, their ability as fishermen, you know, dragging this net full of fish into the shore. The contrast then between this big story of the catch of fish and the breakfast is a contrast of volume, of speed, and also of tone. So when they get to the shore, it is now a symbolic Eucharistic celebration. So they gathered around the fire. Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Bring some of the fish." So he went and he hauled it all off and brought some fish. Jesus took the fish, gave it to them. It has a liturgical tone and of the intimacy of breakfast. In the middle of it, the storyteller explains to the audience, none of them dared ask him, "Who are you?" Because they all knew that it was the Lord. Now this is an inside view of what's going on in the disciples' minds and of what they were thinking. And so this is a moment of inviting the audience to identify fully with the disciples and to see this from their point of view, to share their feelings. So it's important to convey that in the way that you tell the story. Now, the conversation between Jesus and Simon Peter is the most intimate conversation between Jesus and another person in the whole of the gospel tradition. And it is a dialogue that is symbolic, you know, indirect speech. So what Jesus is saying is conveyed as much by the tone of his words as by their content. So he addresses him, Simon Peter, son of John. Simon, son of John. So he does not use his affectionate nickname, Peter, but rather his formal name, Simon, son of John. This is the only time in the gospel tradition in which we learn that Simon's dad's name was John. And so this is a formal address to him, not a friend address, but rather the kind of statement that is made at a wedding when the minister asks each of them in their formal name, "Do you da 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 da?" Once again, it has that liturgical, formal atmosphere. The question is, do you love me? Now, repetitions in biblical storytelling are never repetitions simply to repeat the words. They are always structured to create intensity. And so there's a change every time that words are repeated in the tone in which they are addressed. Now, in this case, there are three. So this is a crescendo of intensity, in which the way that I hear it is that Jesus' questions become more and more intimate, intense, and quiet. So the first one, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Question is, what does these refer to? Is it all these things, fishing, Galilee, the boat, this way of life, or is it the other disciples? And it may include all of those, but given the atmosphere of their going back, the dominant implication is more than these things, more than this place, more than rather than a comparison between whether he loves him more than all the other disciples. The words that are used have sometimes been made a question, an issue, you know, a big deal in Greek. The first two times Jesus asks Simon Peter, do you agapeo, do you love me, using the word agape. The last time he asks phileo, do you love me, phile. Peter always responds with the Greek word phileo. My sense is that there isn't a lot to be made of that, and you can't do it in English. You can't use a different word. It's all translated as love. And so I think the dynamic of this is that in each case, the word love is more intense in Jesus' question and in Peter's response. The third is the most intense, and I think probably then it is that Jesus is the quietest. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was deeply grieved that Jesus asked him. So you want to convey in the tone of this Peter's grief, because the implication of the story is that here he makes the connection between these three questions that Jesus is asking him and the three denials that he had done, the three times that he had denied him. Now, the three responses of Jesus are sometimes confusing to remember. So it is feed, tend, feed, lambs, sheep, sheep. So it's feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. If you remember, feed, tend, feed, and then lambs, sheep, sheep, you know, the young ones, and then the last two are elders, you won't forget that. Also notice that the first two episodes are the same question and answer with minor variations. The third time, it is expanded. Jesus asks him, and Peter is deeply grieved and says, you know everything. You know that I love you. And then the next episode is Jesus' response, which is expanded also. So the climax of his words to Simon are, feed my sheep. Now, just a comment about fishing versus sheep herding. Fishing was a great vocation. You know, you're out in the world. He had an independent business. He was an entrepreneur. Fishing was respected in the ancient world, and it was a great vocation. Herding, on the other hand, was the pits. At one point in the Mishnah, the rabbis say, don't have your sons do three things. Be a butcher, a doctor, or a shepherd, or a herder. They were the three vocations to avoid because they involved uncleanness. But it was also that its cultural associations were that this was a really low-class thing to do. So Jesus is asking Peter to leave something that he loved and symbolically to take care of his sheep, which in terms of its cultural associations was a definite step down. The prophecy that Jesus makes and is then that Peter must face the fact that he will be martyred and not to run away. And so the statement, you know, when you were young, you girded yourself and you went wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will bind you and take you where you don't want to go, is a prophecy of his death. So it's tough talk. It's, let's face the facts. And what are you going to do? Are you going to deny me again? Are you going to run away? Or are you going to stay the course? And the invitation, as well as the command, is then, follow me. But the tone of this is a plea, not a command, because Jesus knows that the command won't work. It's rather an invitation, you know, follow my way. So the common motif at the end of all of the Gospels is the mission of the disciples. And John's story is most like the ending of Mark, where the issue is confronting fear and of facing the realities of what it will mean to be a disciple, one who tells the stories. John's treatment of this common motif is the most intimate, the most direct, the most personal. It is characteristic, then, it's typical of John's gospel that in this place we get to know Jesus more intimately, just as has happened in the long discourse in 13 through 17 at the supper. In this gospel, there is the opportunity to come to know Jesus more intimately and directly as a person than anywhere else in the gospel tradition. So this story is a great opportunity, and I hope you have great joy in telling it, as well as an opportunity to invite everyone who hears this story into their own journey of discipleship.